Hi, I'm Dave Barnes.
And I'm John McLaughlin.
And welcome to Dadville.
Dadville is a podcast where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of awesome dadding.
It's funny thoughts and deep talks.
So please, enjoy your time here in Dadville and enjoy this episode with...
Corey
Wong. Dave... John, we all love summer, and our kids especially love summer, but we lose that consistent schedule of when kids are in school, and that can create some summer childcare problems.
You know what? Thankfully, though, Dave, there's a solution.
What?
Windy. That's W-Y-N-D-Y. Listen, it's an app that connects families to college student nannies literally in minutes. These nannies are background checked, interviewed, and honestly, just awesome, Dave.
That's right, John. And Windy has been around for 7 years and has been used by over 20,000 families. There are hundreds of qualified college student nannies on Windy near you, working full or part-time.
All you have to do is go to windy.com/dadville to start searching for a nanny. And as a special offer, they're going to knock off $50 off your search if you go through that link. Windy provides top-notch service, but at a fraction of the cost of traditional nanny agencies and no ongoing fees.
Okay, so here's how it works. Go to windy.com/dadville to start your search. A Windy concierge will find great matches for your job and set up interviews for you. You can choose the one you like.
Get started now, because there are a lot of parents out there looking for nannies for the summer.
That's right.
Go to wyndy.com/dadville.
And I just want people that are listening that have seen the title and they're thinking, look at this. This is three guys who podcast at a professional level that without a doubt in the 100 plus 60, 50, whatever we're at now, we've never had more technical problems than the last 10 minutes. You know,
it makes me feel like when the Trinity gets together for a meeting.
Yeah.
That it takes like, it must take like 30, 40 minutes just to get off the ground. And they're like, why can't we do this?
Oh, that really got me. Oh, man. I just love the
thought. Who are each of us in that?
Yeah, I don't want to go there because I don't.
I think it's pretty. I think it's obvious. Yeah.
Let's just leave it there. Oh, my gosh. Corey, what a joy to see you. You look healthy, wealthy, and wise. You look well lit. You look 4K'd.
Hey, I'm glad to be here. I'm stoked to be here with you guys.
This is one of those interviews that when I see it on the schedule, I'm like, oh, this is going to be fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is going to be fun.
Yeah.
Sure is.
Now, to any of our past guests listening, I feel that about all of them. I felt that about you.
Yeah.
But in reality, not really.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I'm excited to be here. Not a lot of other podcasts do I say yes to nowadays because I've been so busy with mine.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys are friends, so I'm like, of course.
Get on here.
And plus, like, we've been needing to catch up for a while. I see you in what looks like a backyard Nashville studio. Looks dope. John, I see the piano next to you, already mic'd up. Constantly mic'd.
Yeah.
Constantly mic'd. You don't know when that idea is going to hit.
Yeah, yeah.
Classical sheet music hanging on the piano just to look more legit, just like I did here with this score.
It's not even real.
Yeah.
It's not even real.
I don't even know what this is.
Yeah.
That was an Amazon. You're just like, just give me a score.
Yeah, I had to prime now. Just a score.
I just did the buy now.
Hit me overnight. So everybody, you hear the dulcet tones of Corey Wong. And as we always do, Corey, we start with what's called the brag sheet, which is, you know, getting to know you, getting to know all about you. So this is, Corey, this is your life. This is your life. I always do those two jokes, but here we are. Okay, those Corey Wong, Minneapolis and how do you say that?
It's Minneapolis. You know, I went to a Globetrotters game a couple weeks ago, which, by the way, so much
still
fun.
Good. Still good.
Yeah. Peak entertainment.
It's a must see.
Yeah.
The guy, the host, the whole time was saying Minneapolis. And everybody in the building is just like, bro.
But it could be on brand. It's like the Globetrotters. They're like, they fumble and fall and pull it off in the end.
Here's what I have to say about that. I said Minneapolis for probably the first 18 years of my life. But with my proximity to Indianapolis, I feel like I should get a pass.
Well, and I'm Mississippi too, so we've got too many S's. So it's all, you know.
Sure.
But how do you say, if you live in Minneapolis, are you a Minneapolisan?
Minneapolisan?
You know that?
I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
We say we're from the Twin Cities.
There we go. Boom.
That's Minneapolis, St. Paul. That's
you're a twin. So you're a twin.
Yeah, you're a twin. He's a twinian. Okay, released 11 studio albums and 12 live albums since 2017, which is a pace that intimidates and terrifies me, but also excites and makes me hungry. Once recorded an entire live album on Ice Skates, which that's just a fun fact. We throw these in because it's fun, Corey. Released 5 albums with the Fearless Flyers, released 5 albums with Wolfpack, released full album collaborations with John Batiste, Dirty Loops, Dave Koz, nominated for Best New Album Grammy. Come on. In 2021, I see him hanging on the back there, the back of your wall, for collaboration with John Batiste, Meditations. Yeah. Appeared as a feature artist on albums by, this is incredible, dude, this list. Ariel Posen, Ben Rector, Grace Kelly, Alexander 23, Undertones, Phoebe Cates, Cody Fry Moore. Also, which you
What about Dave Barnes?
Well, listen, Jason,
why aren't you putting Dave
Jason
Barnes
our
on?
Mutual podcast producer, decided to leave me off of that. And you've played on John McLaughlin albums, too, haven't you? You've played on Songs of John's, didn't you? John, didn't you send him something to play on?
I don't think John's ever asked me. He's got cooler guitar players.
Too intimidated.
No, there's no such thing as cooler guitar players. Also, as you referenced before, hosts a podcast called Wong Notes, which we've already talked about this, Corey. Best name for a podcast in the history of time. Which has featured John Mayer, Nancy Wilson, Jacob Collier, Kevin Bacon, Joe Walsh, and dozens of others.
I hope that you had the idea for Wong Notes and you didn't have no interest in doing a podcast, but you were like, God,
I have to start a podcast.
I can't. I have the
you
title.
You can't sit on this name and not create a podcast because of it.
The issue is I had the name in high school.
Oh,
because when I was in high school,
there was nothing to do with
like,
it.
Man, I hope podcasts become a thing.
No. I had when I was in high school, I thought it was always my dream to be like a variety show band leader. So we would host events with the youth group.
Mm.
And I was just like, yeah, I'm going to have my friends, and I was going to be Corey in the Wong Notes, was like Max Weinberg.
Yeah.
You know, that was the reference for me, was Max Weinberg.
Yeah.
Max Weinberg 7 or whatever. So I was Corey in the Wong Notes in high school for my variety show kind of hosting thing.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to do it, but now I finally, you know, kind of have the resources.
The perfect place to do it. So question, this is always what we start with. Having heard that, because, I mean, that's an impressive list of things. And that's one of the things that we're leaving off is, I mean, how many people you've played for on stage, like, you know, how many albums you've played on, because that's really substantial. And people need to understand that what's so cool about your career, and we'll talk about this in a little while, but, like, you know, that you've kind of had, you know, sort of two careers almost, and they're both always going.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, you started as a studio guy, a sideman. And then, you know, you've morphed into artists in your own right doing those things, but still kind of dabbling with both. And so that leaves that out. But so knowing all of that, how do you feel hearing that? And even maybe even more acutely, how would like 16-year-old Corey Wong feel hearing that? If you could time travel and tell him all the things that are coming up in his life.
I mean, come on. I'd be totally stoked. I'd be a little confused. Like, bro, how are you not in Green Day yet? Like, you've done all this, and you're still telling me you're not in Green Day or Blink-182?
Wait, I don't...
Where did we go wrong?
This is surprising. I don't... Yeah. How in the world is Green Day factor into your guitar playing?
Green Day doesn't have any of
any.
Like, the Corey Wong thing, that doesn't happen
well,
in
even
Green Day.
Just, like... Another thing I think about your playing that's so great is your voicings. And again, that's just neither one of those things are Green Day things.
Look, it's the energy
of
punk rock that I grew
up
on. So I grew up going to Warped Tour.
That is so funny.
You know, I was obsessed with 90s alt rock. I was obsessed with pop punk and all of that stuff. And yeah, my first couple bands were little punk rock bands. Where I would play guitar and sing, and we would do Green Day covers, but then also we would do the sections of Metallica songs that I knew.
So, okay,
it's like the guitar solos for the song one. You know, like we couldn't do the rest of it. We're just going to play the other parts.
That's very punk rock of you to be like, no, I'm not going to learn the whole thing. I'm going to do the bit that I know.
Wonderful about that is that I want to laugh so hard. I'm trying to really keep it in, but like it's like every town, city, whatever, had the kid or couple of kids who actually like could play. Like they really, really like they had it.
Yeah.
And so if you grew up in that scene where like one of your friends is like, bro, no, that's not what they do there. It's this voicing. And they're doing, and I didn't have any of those. So exactly like you, Corey, like when we would cover something, it was like, it wasn't the relative minor. It was the major. It wasn't the, you know, it was like whatever our brain knew, like, oh no, that's the, you can sing that over this progression. I'm pretty sure that's it. And so.
And it might not sound great, but it only lasts for a second. And then we've moved on.
But I mean, there's no better way to show an example of just playing the parts of the song.
Oh, yeah. And plus it was like, the other parts are a little boring. There's all this singing over it. Like, can we just play the guitar solos, please?
Oh, that just makes me so happy. It's just such a dedication to that one thing. Like, and you're just totally okay with that. It's like, oh, no, we're not going to dabble with the things that feel a little too difficult.
So when you're going to the Warped Tour in high school and stuff, are you like in the mosh pit or are you like outside of the mosh pit, like admiring, like, oh, I think he's using the fuzz pedal on, like, which one are you?
I'm switching off between the two and I'm actually doing a little hustling at the same time.
What is
there's a third.
What's the hustling?
There's a third option.
We can get there. We can get there. But, you know, Warped Tour is an all day affair. We're talking 35, 40 bands or something. So, parents drop you off at 9 a.m. and pick you up at 10 p.m.
Jeez Louise.
You know, so it's like, all right, I'm going to pace myself.
Yeah,
right?
So
I got to choose which bands I'm going in the pit for, which I ended up getting stuck once against my will, but was stoked because at the time, okay, so I think the lineup, if I'm remembering right, they had two main stages and one act would play and then on the other stage, they're setting up for the other, right?
Yeah,
it goes boom, 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 boom. So it was Mighty Mighty Boston's, No Doubt, Lit.
Oh, by
the way, got booed off the stage. I felt terrible for him. Lit got booed off the stage.
Because they just like, weren't sounding great or what?
They're just playing all, the rest of the record. It's like everybody's like, get to the hit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, man. And then it was like MXPX and then somebody else. And then I'm waiting in front of the B stage because I wanted to be front row for Green Day. So I happened to be there direct in front of Green Day was Black Eyed Peas.
Oh.
Pre-Fergie.
Oh, yeah,
pretty
yeah.
Fergie, that Black was Eyed Peas.
Black Eyed Peas they were, on the Warped Tour?
That would have been amazing.
That makes no sense.
I love
that. Well, it was like, but if you think about it, Warped Tour was also a lot about skater culture.
Yeah.
And there was a couple skateboarding videos. I believe it was like Kareem Campbell or somebody had a Black Eyed Peas song on a skate video that just like was one of those ones that everybody talked about or something. It was like Jurassic 5 and Black Eyed Peas were super big in the skate world.
Yep.
Okay.
And I think some of it was culture-wise because breakdancing in Black Eyed Peas. Anyways, so I'm front row for Black Eyed Peas, and the bass was so loud. It was so loud in my stomach. The subs were just blaring, and I'm being pushed from behind. And by the way, I'm like 13, right? So my intestines can't really handle it. I threw up right over the rail. The security guard's like, you're out. You're out. I'm like, no, I swear. I'm good. And they're like, you know, they're talking about underage drinking, and I'm not drinking. I'm like, dude, I'm just, it's the base. I swear. And the guy's like, no drinking, no kids under it. You know, they thought that my friends and I were maybe drinking and we had thrown up. It's just like, no, dude, I've been at the Metrodome parking lot in 110 degrees.
Yeah, yeah.
And this base is slamming at me, and these people are pushing against me. I'm trying to enjoy the show. They let me stay. And I saw some Green Day, but then I was going to pass out. I knew I had to get out of there. So I did then just go back and enjoy. But I did. I scoped the amps. I scoped the gear. It was good.
Yeah.
I just love that your ears just like, why is there not more Green Day? Why am I not in Green Day? I just love
that. Yeah, that would be 16-year-old Corey's like, all right, cool. I like this list, Dave. interesting to see what I'm going to be doing. Okay, cool to hear that you're doing your own music, but really?
I'm not like rooming with Billy Joe.
It's not too late.
It's not too late. It's not too late.
I mean,
late.
I could see it in the cards for you for sure.
There's a handful of bands that if they ask me, I have no choice. I put my career on pause and I go, I serve my country by playing with these bands.
I think if you went after Green Day the way you went after Dave Koz back in the day,
yeah.
If you went on a campaign like that, you will be on stage with Billy Joe,
no doubt,
in the year. That's my prediction.
Yeah. The problem is people can't see it. Like, you guys are both like, what? So
right.
I got to find, realistically, I need to find that band. You know who's just pulling the best fast one ever is Mayer. He's got his entire career, and then he's part of Dead and Company,
which
doesn't conflict at all.
At all.
Like, the fan base, if they're going to overlap, they're going to overlap. And the people that want to see him do his music, they're just going to go to his shows.
Yeah.
The people that want to see the Dead music, they're going to go to those shows. So he's doing...
The John Mayer fan that had only been listening to Body is a Wonderland for the last 20 years and then sees the Dead & Co. is so confused.
Totally.
Yeah.
But they're living in their own independent worlds, and they're bringing value.
Which is why I think you could be like the side man. You could be like the guy in Green Day that's sort of like just off to the left, power courting into oblivion, never been happier. And people are like, God, that guy looks like Corey Wong, but he's got makeup on.
Yeah, I would definitely be wearing eyeliner. Heavy eyeliner.
Yeah,
yeah.
Heavy eyeliner. I would probably dye my hair black.
I was going to say.
You got to go black or you got to go like bright green or something like that. Yeah.
I did also, maybe I frost my tips, you know?
Yeah,
sure.
Yep.
Frost the tips.
Is that coming back? Are the frosted tips coming back?
It could be. I believe in Corey.
I think the frosted tips, if I'm in Green Day, I'm frosting my tips.
Yeah. And we have our title.
You got to treat yourself once in your life.
Yeah, you do.
I'm going all black, and then I'm frosting the tips. These are two separate appointments, though.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I've got my first official question here for you, Corey Wong. So... Dave just read the brag sheet. I mean, 11 studio albums, 12 live albums since 2017.
Yeah.
Here's my question for you. How you are a dad, you have kids. How many kids do you have?
Three.
You have three kids. I mean, you're the master of your own domain here. You're not answering to anyone. You are, any given day, you wake up and you are deciding what to work on.
Yeah.
And you have all these different things that you're doing. How do you decide, how do you determine where the healthy balance is?
So it's not necessarily about bandwidth for me, because I would work all day and I could work. I'm like bummed when I have to go to bed.
Yeah.
But I'm one of those cats that's got to sleep 8 hours or I'm just kind of miserable.
Yeah.
But I totally could, if I could just work all day, I'd be fine to do it. Like I could sit and do it. So yes, I have to be intentional about finding the balance, because it's not like, all right, so of course there's certain days where I don't really want to get into it, but then I get into it and then it's fun. You know, it's really fun for me. It's exciting to keep exploring. I'm forever curious. So the bandwidth and curiosity side is not where it lacks. So it's the real thing for me is if I'm home. Like, everybody's out of the house now. I'm home alone, you know? So I've basically got 6 hours to do whatever I want. I can dick around and play guitar, work out. I'm going to do that later. That's me telling myself I'm going to do it later.
Sure. We have that on record. Is that part of it? Is like, are you one of those guys that, like, if you don't get the exercise in, like, you got to get the sleep in, is the exercise equally as important?
Yeah, because it helps maintain a good, I don't know, it helps keep me in a good mental state. Or if I do feel like I'm going in circles with something, either mentally or on the computer, if I'm like, I got to step away from this for a second. If I work out and move my body, it all of a sudden kicks everything back.
Yeah.
But I think the main thing right now is figuring out what's the number of days on the road that feels acceptable for the time being, and then... down the road, I mean, the thing that I have always been cognizant of is I can't tour like this forever. I don't know how many years I'm going to be able to do it like this, but for right now, I don't know, 40% of the year on the road, that's a lot. That's a lot of time, days away from home. But could I get away with being gone 150 and then budgeting what are the things that I say yes to when I am gone? But when I'm home, you know, I work pretty fast. I mean, both of you, we all have a mutual friend in John Fields. And John is somebody who really taught me how to work quick, how to work fast, how to work efficient. And so I, you know, with everything on the side of when I have my regular rig up and running, it's kind of effortless. But also the decision making, I've learned to trust some of my own instincts and some of my own decision making, so a lot of it can go faster. Also, the other thing is, you guys are writing songs with lyrics, and the words need to be a little more clever. They need to be they can be interpreted and should be interpreted in multiple ways. And there's a lot of layers to things. Where the stuff that I do is mostly instrumental, and I don't know, it's just easier. It can be. There's so many versions of what can be right on something. I don't have to rhyme the end of a phrase on my guitar part with the next one.
Yeah.
You know, I can just, when it's instrumental, I don't know. To me, it just feels like there's a lot less, there's a lot more interpretation for the listener, and they can, it kind of gives permission both to myself and the listener to make it easier.
Oh my gosh. Good. I forget you are actually allergic to being tickled. And I didn't know that was a medical thing. John, can I tell you something?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Sometimes the thought with the daily stresses of parenting, working long hours, or skipping meals, that thought, it may be having an effect on why my hair may be thinning. This is what I think about. And you know what, John, that's funny? I was on to something.
You're exactly right, Dave. I was on to something. Yeah, thinning hair. That's why we love Nutrafol. Yeah. I didn't want to say it together, so I'm going to say it just by myself. Okay. Don't say it with me. That's why we love Nutrafol. See, you whispered it.
No, I
get it. You want to say it because they're that good.
It's so great.
They're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement with over 1 million people getting thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding.
Your hair is never just about your hair, and Nutrafol knows that. That's why Nutrafol takes a whole body approach to hair health, addressing the problems inside to help hair grow on the outside. See what they did there? Supporting your lifestyle, not just your hairstyle.
Yeah, and with Nutrafol, building a hair growth routine is simple.
So easy.
Right?
Unbelievable.
Purchase online. No prescription or doctor's visit required.
Yeah.
Free shipping with automated deliveries to ensure that you'll never miss a day. See results in 3 to 6 months.
Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter your promo code DADVILLE.
Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code DADVILLE.
That's Nutrafol.com, promo code DADVILLE. Man,
Dave, I want to give a shout out. And when I give a shout out, I always laugh because it just brings me so much joy to give a shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with free samples.
You know it, John. This time of year, my allergies are in fuego. They're always on the attack, but I use this and you should too.
Oh, I do, Dave. Every day in our house. Yeah. Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D.
Designed for serious allergy sufferers, which is me raising my hand, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill to relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better.
This double-action combination of prescription-strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, and itchy nose and throat and sinus congestion and pressure with ease.
John, I've been taking Claritin D for my allergies for a long time, and it's been an absolute life changer. I can go for a run without my eyes watering. I may be crying, but it's not from allergies.
Totally different.
And I can sing without feeling like I have a big old, let's not even call it a frog. It's like a toad.
It's like a family of toads.
It's a turtle.
Yeah.
In my throat.
So
You ready to live life as if you don't have allergies?
Yeah, me.
It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter.
Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed. There's nothing that John and I grieve more together than lyric writing. Like, as we're writing songs, like, we'll sit and just lament,
100%.
Like, how hard it, I mean, it's hard enough a few records, but when you've got as many records as John and I do, you're like, oh man, we're still writing lyrics. Like, what else can I say?
What else do I have to say?
Yeah.
I started doing a like classical series of records.
Yeah.
A couple years ago. And I 1,000% agree. It felt so free. It felt like, kind of like you said, like there are layers. I'm choosing between like 3 or 4 different directions and they all kind of seem good.
Yeah.
Whereas with lyrics, you're just like, well, this objectively doesn't rhyme. Or like this objectively, you've got 3 too many syllables.
Yeah.
For your phrase here. So like, yeah, it was very freeing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so I wanted to back up just for a second. Corey, when you think about being gone like that, you need to make a family, you think about working and the road and everything, is that something where you and your wife sit down and talk about that? Or do you kind of come with her with a, hey, this is where I am, what do you think about this? Or have y'all sort of taken, you know, what is that conversation like when you're thinking about that, being gone?
Well,
she's a huge listener,
you know,
too.
The years of varying degrees of success and tension in these things, as you guys, I'm sure, are familiar, where it's like, you know, you want to strike while the iron's hot.
Yeah.
You want to find the balance of what works, what doesn't. And there's just always been like a, it's not going to be like this forever, sort of. Like, there's a lot of years with a lot of hustling without anybody caring. So I lived my entire 20s just trying to find gigs and doing what I could. And it basically instilled in me a certain level of humility and a certain level of just like reality of what we do, as opposed to some of my friends who everybody cared about what they did when they were 22. And then when they hit their 30s, they're like, why doesn't anybody care? And then they get caught in the fact that they had been living this certain lifestyle for a decade. And so for me, it's just been like, wow, nobody cared. And I was home all the time through my 20s. Now it's like, oh, people care. And I have something that I've found that's unique to me and that people want to see. So it's like, whoa, all that work is starting to pay off. So there is a certain, like all of my family, my parents and my siblings and everything are like, yeah, go for it. Be proud and stoked about what's going on, but find some sort of balance in it. So it's not always about a conversation of, okay, here's the number of days allowed. At one point, you know, there was a spreadsheet in the house that was a dynamic spreadsheet of number of days gone versus days home. And then the spreadsheet would go in the red. You know, that's what it's like living with an engineer. But it didn't work for me. You know, it was just, and then it just, of course, didn't work for anybody. But it's one of those things now where it's some conversation. It's like, hey, these shows in Asia, you know, it's too good of an offer to refuse. And like, I've never been to China. I want to go to China. All the guys in my band want to go to China. And also, you know, there is a certain regard of, I have 9 band members that my gig is their main thing. And I have 4 crew members that my gig is their main thing. So I do want to keep them busy enough and keep them comfortable enough where they can make a comfortable living playing with me, you know? So there's a balance with that and being responsible on what I'm asking of my team as well. And being a good steward of the resources and platform that I have. But yes, like you're saying, like that, the ultimate question is how do you find that balance and where do you, it's not really a set conversation right now. It's just kind of a mutual agreement that, hey, Ellie and you signed up for kickboxing classes together. Like, try to make it to as many as you can. Like, you know, my daughter and I are doing these kickboxing classes, and you know, I'm asking her minimum 2 times a week you got to go, but we're trying to hit 3-4 times a week. And then if I'm gone for 2 weeks, she's like, "Yo, Dad, I've been going to kickboxing. Where are you?"
Mm.
And then, you know, uh-huh. So there's some, you know, it's just one of those, hey, I'm going to be gone for a couple weeks. Then I'll be home for a few weeks, gone for a few weeks, home for 2 months, you know, whatever. So it's just finding the balance of, I don't know. I do have a hard 4 weeks is the absolute max gone at one time. I need to come home and check back in.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's it like with the kids? Like, what are their ages right now?
My daughters are 13 and 11, and my son is 4.
4, okay.
Almost 5.
Okay. I remember one time in a particularly heavy season where I was touring what I felt like wasn't that much. I was actually, like, I would normally go out and, like, sort of knock everything out at once. And
yeah.
Like, I might be touring for 5 weeks, but I would come home a couple times throughout that, but then, like, once the 5 weeks is done, it's like I'm home for a couple months.
Yeah.
But I had changed, and I was flying out and sort of doing the weekend thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, which I had never done before. But I felt like this is going to be great. And the girls were a little bit younger at the time, and so they would be taking me to the airport a lot, you know, every week. And I remember my daughter drew a picture in school of the airport. And she said, "This is where my dad lives."
Mm.
And that was a real moment where I was like, all right, okay, so that might have been a swing and a miss. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
But you've got the conversation with my wife, Amy, on touring and all that kind of stuff. And then there's the relationship that you have with your kids and, like, the little messages that they give you that are sort of the indicate. They tend to be a little more cryptic with my kids, you know. They don't, like, say it outright all the time. What is that like with you and your kids?
I grew up, my parents split when I was younger, so I've switched off every week. My dad 1 week, my mom 1 week, my dad 1 week, my mom 1 week. So in my brain, I grew up with the ability to just kind of shift, boom, 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 and it was mm-hmm. fine. It was just totally normal. And sometimes my dad would travel for work, so I'd be at my mom's for a couple of weeks. And you know, I didn't ever think, oh, my dad doesn't want to be with us, you know, because he's whatever. He was passionate about his work. He was stoked about it, and he was good at it. And because I know that that can exist in a way that is actually, you know, it didn't feel to me where I look back, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so messed up that I was able to switch or whatever. Like, I do know that my kids, there is the ability to on off some of that. And honestly, it's way easier now because there's FaceTime, there's texting with my kids, which is so weird, by the way, but great because we can stay in contact and we can stay involved in what each other are doing. But also, yeah, I mean, it's kind of all they've ever known. But the thing that they do know is dad is doing something that he absolutely loves, that he really cares about, that he's super passionate about, that he really truly feels. And we know that it is his calling in life. This is what he's meant to do. So they see me living out my passion. They see me living out something that I'm really meant to do. And it, you know, in some ways, I hope that it inspires them to do the same. And I know that it is. And, you know, we communicate about that. And, you know, I make sure that they know I'm not leaving because I don't want to be with them. I'm leaving because this is my job and this is what I do. And yes, it's different than, you know, what your friend's parents might do or whatever. But, you know, we're a different family. Everybody's different. And And they recognize that they're different from their friends too. And I don't know. I think it's pretty healthy in that regard. I think now I am starting to be a little more conscious of that sort of thing and making sure that we're communicating more and that they really know And you know, I go in phases of like, I love being on the road to, I just want to be home. And also my oldest daughter now, I'm kind of thinking, oh, she could come with to some of these festival one-offs and she'd have some fun, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so speaking of your upbringing and your, you know, week on with dad, week on with mom, all that stuff. I read this quote from you, which I thought was hilarious. You said, I was a Chinese kid growing up until I went to kindergarten and then they told me I wasn't Chinese. Because is it your dad's side?
Yeah, my dad is full Chinese.
And then your mom is Irish.
Irish
the Murphy
Norwegian.
Side.
Yes.
Irish Norwegian.
So I'm a Wong and a Murphy. Very strong,
Wow.
Unmistakable last names.
Yeah, and the fact that your setup as a kid was like a week with one parent, a week with the other parent, that even more so would make the two sort of cultures, I would imagine, like you're experiencing this for 7 days and then you're experiencing this for 7 days. Did it feel like there was like a culture shift happening, or was it just like, no, I'm at my dad's place, my dad's my dad, and then I'm at my mom's place?
Not really, because my dad grew up in the U.S. My dad grew up in Rochester, Minnesota, and my grandparents, when they moved over, they learned very early. So they sent my aunt, the oldest of the kids of the generation before me, they sent my aunt to school only knowing Chinese and not speaking English. And the teacher's like, what are you doing? So from that point, I was like, oh, yeah. Like, you know, a kid needs to speak English to go to school in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Kind of like semi-small town Minnesota.
So
from there, I think it was a big shift to, all right, let's make this an American family unit as much as we can. So I think with my dad... Yeah, it was just a regular American family home, but you know, as the 23andMe suggests, I am 49.7% Chinese. So, but yes, I mean, but going to family functions and stuff, like my last name is Wong. I'd go to family functions, and everybody's Chinese. You know, and I look at pictures now. I'm like, oh yeah, of course. Like my brother and I look different because, you know, we're half. We have Norwegian and Irish blood as well. So it was one of those things where it was kind of an interesting, you know, growing up, identifying as one thing and going to all the family gatherings. My grandparents owned a Chinese restaurant, you know, so we eat Chinese food all the time. There's rice with every meal, you know, so it's like, oh, you go to school and I look at myself, I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't really look like Trung, do I? You know, Trung was the Vietnamese kid in the class, and he's like, yeah, dude, like, you're not full Chinese. Like, it's okay. Like, and, you know, Trung is still a friend of mine to this day, but, like, thinking back in kindergarten, he's like, dude, like, I'm Vietnamese.
Yeah.
Which like, that can feel, I know, to, like, my best friend since fifth grade growing up is Korean. His mom's Korean. His dad, you know, is just a white guy. And I know that can sometimes... make that kid feel like, well, I don't really belong in either camp here, even though I'm, you know, I should belong to both of these. You know, this is part of me. But sometimes you can feel sort of like the odd man out in both groups. Did you ever feel that way?
Yeah. I mean, when I was even in high school, like there was maybe, you know, in my school, I didn't have a huge school that I went to. I think, you know, I mean, it was big enough. My graduating class was 200 and there were, I think, 6 Asian people in my graduating class. So to all my friends in high school, it was like, oh, yeah, he's one of the Asian kids. You know, like, oh, Wong? Like, oh, yeah. Yo, it's my Asian friend, Corey. So it's like that sort of thing. But to any of my friends that, you know, are like full-on Asian and that present, or however you want to say it, that look Asian, it's like, oh, yeah, this is... He's a white dude, you know?
Yeah.
And it's okay. Like, I totally get either. I'm not offended by either, but it is one of those like, yeah, I'm kind of in the middle. But actually, it's given me, you know, there's a lot of hot button conversations nowadays about, you know, how do you identify yourself? And how does somebody feel? Like, is when is it okay to say that you are something when you don't look a certain way to other people? It's actually given me a ton of compassion and a certain empathy and understanding for that conversation growing up and being like, I feel Asian because my name's Wong and I'm half Chinese and I know that. And also my family would be pissed if I didn't say that I was Chinese.
Right.
You know, but everybody also knows, like, I don't look like, you wouldn't look at me and be like, oh, yeah, that's a Chinese guy. You know?
Right.
But some people would meet me and they're like, oh, yeah, I get it. Oh, yeah, I see it.
Mm-hmm. Does your brother feel that way?
He looks maybe 5% more Chinese than I do. But the thing that he has going against him on the Asian side is he's tall. He's like 6'3".
Going against him.
Yeah, so he, on one hand, his face might look a little more Asian, but, you know, he's a tall guy. So.
His body is, it's a war with itself.
Yeah.
It's like,
that's funny.
There's plenty of tall Asian guys, though.
Oh, there are. Yeah.
Yeah.
John, tag, you're supposed to run after me after I touch you. You can't, that's not how tag works, the way you're playing.
It's a regional thing. I'm playing Midwestern rules.
Oh, I should have known that. Okay, my bad. Yeah. Sorry.
Hey, speaking of, Dave, you know, with Memorial Day coming up,
I'm guessing you're
probably getting ready for plenty of fun days in the sun.
Oh, my gosh.
Am I right?
First, I have to learn these rules for tag. But yes, everyone knows this, John. Everyone knows that time in the sun is best enjoyed with a pair of shades that you don't have to baby.
Oh, yeah.
Knockaround is the original affordable sunglasses company, and they've got just what you need for Memorial Day weekend, MDW, for those of us who celebrate all year, and all the way through summertime.
They do. And with over 20 different frame styles, there's something for the whole family, including tons for kids.
So, whether you're looking to rock a pair of red, white, and blue shades for the big weekend, or just to restock your collection before summer gets here, Knockaround has you covered.
Now, Dave.
Yeah.
Did you know that all their lenses have UV 400 protection, which is basically like sunscreen for your eyeballs?
Oh, man. And I've put copper tone just right on the old ojos, and it burns.
It's
is not burning
pretty.
Still to this day.
Yeah, well, you keep putting it on.
Well, it's a habit. With polarized adult pairs starting at $28, you can get a few pairs to leave in your car, toss in your beach bag, or lend to a friend in need.
You know, Dave, where I come from, Memorial Day weekend means it's race day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and
oh,
there's no more important place to have some shades than outside at the track.
Oh, yeah.
If you've heard me say that once, you've heard me say that a million
times. It's on your front yard.
I think I might actually just buy a pair of knockarounds in that color.
Yeah.
Like in the color of each car, actually.
Yeah.
And it's switching back and forth based on who's leading the race.
Love that. That's one of the best ideas you've ever had.
So listen, Dadville fans, take that idea and run with it. Also, don't be the one squinting through family beach days or trips to the park. Go to knockaround.com and use the promo code DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order.
That's DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order at knockaround.com.
I just said that.
Hello, Dave. Wow. Okay, yours was better than mine. Johnny.
Thanks.
Are you loving this warmer weather? Summer is just around the corner.
Dave, I am so glad that you brought that up because the weather has been so great. I'm playing tennis, right? I'm sitting outside on the porch in my tennis shoes, going for walks in different shoes. I don't walk in tennis shoes. Yeah, I mean, it's so nice. And honestly, I don't really want to be spending too much time in the kitchen making meals because there's so many other
John. That's where Factor comes in. You can fuel up with Factor's no prep, no mess meals, so you can spend more time outside.
Okay, it sounds good, but Dave, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Can I meet my wellness goals in time for summer with Factor?
I hope you've got goals and then more goals, John, because we'd call you Cristiano Ronaldo. Soccer joke.
Heyo.
And guess what? And then some, John. It's going to be just fine. Factor has chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. And Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
Dave, that sounds so awesome. You've talked me into it. I'm ready.
Wow, that was easy.
I'm ready to kickstart my routine with 35 different
Good
meals.
Gracious.
And more than 60 add-ons to choose from,
Goodness
Dave. Did you know
gracious.
That? I'm educating you now. And these are restaurant quality meals like filet mignon,
Ooh.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
Blackened salmon.
Enjoy
you know?
Effortless support for your lifestyle. Choose from 6 menu preferences to help you manage calories, maximize protein intake, avoid meat, or simply eat well-balanced.
Head to factormeals.com/dadville50 and use the code dadville50 to get 50% off. That's 50, 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month.
That's code DADVILLE50 at factormeals.com/DADVILLE50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
Yeah. Okay, I've got a question. This is more of a music question. So I'm curious about this in particular because I feel like this is one of the challenges that I face any given day, you know, to all our friends who have a more like traditional job, it's a little more, your week is like Monday hits. You've got an office that you go to, or if you work at home, whatever, like, but you like, you sign into Slack and you do your emails or what, you do your job.
Ugh.
With us, it's like, I know. And they're looking at us.
Slack, like, oh man.
I know.
Can you get the mouse clicker to make your boss think that you're there? Whatever. yes.
And
on.
I think that there is a tendency, the grass is always greener, but those friends would be like, so you do, what are you going to do tomorrow? You're going to do whatever you want tomorrow, John. That's exactly what you're going to do. You're going to, if it's a really nice day outside, maybe you don't work that much that day or whatever, you know. And it's true. We can all go to our studios and do whatever feels good. And that can be a real challenge to me. Like, that's a real weight. Like, sometimes I'm back here and I'll sit at the piano and I'll just kind of warm up. I'll be playing whatever. Maybe I'll play an idea that I came up with, you know, last Friday and it's Monday. And I'm like, okay, what do I do? Because I came back here and I was like, maybe I should like start recording on that, you know, that other session. But should I be writing the song? Should that be the thing that always wins? Like, always write the song if there's an idea. And then you're like, well, it's 2024. Corey just put out some awesome content. I should shoot a video. Maybe I should cover Taylor Swift's new song and like put that out. Like, how do you decide in any given moment what to do? Because there are always options open to you and you're your own boss.
Yeah. That is part of the question. I don't really struggle too much with this for one reason. I don't overthink it. The thing that I'm always doing is I'm always thinking project based. So I'm always looking towards when is the project due and then what is the next thing that follows up with that. And then mm-hmm. the strategy conversations and what other thing, everything else is just kind of always going in the background. So, you know, to me, like, I just recorded this. I'm working on an album right now with the Metropole Orchestra, a collab album. I went over and recorded with the orchestra for 10 days. My goal is to have this album mixed by, I don't know, May 5th. I think I want to start putting out the record, screw it, in June. I got no label telling me when to do it or not.
Yeah.
You know? Feels like a good time. I'm going to be announcing some other stuff. It'll be good timing to build some buzz, do some things around there. Leave 4th of July weekend off the table. Let everybody have their peace. Put stuff out around there. So right now, I'm just getting things prepped to meet that deadline. So
yeah.
Before this, I was mixing down. I have all 10 songs. I have a good rough mix of, and I'm going to send it to the conductor and the arrangers to get some of their opinion on where the mixes are, and then I'll listen to them on my AirPods while I'm walking. Make my notes. I'll gather all those notes. Make the adjustments, send it to a couple friends to get some feedback, and then I'll be done. So right now I'm thinking, these are the projects that I need to get done. There's a song that one of my friends sent me that I'm going to record some guitars for. They said they needed it by Friday. I'll get it done at some point before Friday. And in the meantime, all the other stuff that I need to do, which is prepping for tour, editing some videos here and there. I'll just get it done. Like, it's just stuff that I know that I need to get done before the end of the week, and I'll prioritize it in the times where I know I'll be able to get it done. But I do think in part of what we do, you need to have some time to just sit around and dick around and just do nothing. And then all of a sudden,
right,
the thing comes. You know, like, it's part of our, the way that we think as creatives and writers, you just need to go out and look at billboards. What are people doing? Like, you're mm-hmm. like, look at, and that's also kind of metaphorical as well. It's like, you know, it feels kind of weird to say it's my job to look at my phone for an hour and just see, just pay attention to the conversation. What's going on in the conversation? I don't really care about, oh, these are the trends that are working, I'm going to chase the trend. That does not appeal to me at all. If there's stuff that people are digging, certain styles of things that people are digging, and it feels like it's in alignment with who I am as an artist, cool. I'll cater my stuff a little bit towards that. But a lot of what I'm doing and the way that I shape my day is mostly around, these are the things that need to get done by this time. And as long as I'm pretty diligent about that, it's fine. And sometimes there's more pressure. Like, I wrote this theme song for the TV show After Midnight, and there was a lot of back and forth, and I made 6 demos and they loved 3 of them. And then I really hammered those, and they're like, actually, we want to change directions, but we need it by Monday and it's Friday. It's like, all right, well, I have nothing that I'm going to work on other than this right now. And, you know, so certain things require immediate attention, and certain things just like, at some point today, I am going to make the little mix tweaks that the arrangers sent me for these songs. I'll bounce them down. I'll listen to them, and I'll be good. And then the other thing that I've also found to be really helpful is learning when to delegate and learning to find the people that you can trust to delegate to, both in the logistics and in the creative side. Barnes, for example, I was working on this collab album with Dirty Loops, and we were working on these songs, and it's like, you know, we got this deadline, and I could really sit on these songs and really hone in on writing these, and I could do this. And you know what? At the end of the day, why don't I find somebody? Like, we had this shell of an idea for some lyrics of this song, Follow the Light. And we were kind of on it, and I'm like, just had a little bit of a stalemate with the lyrics. And I was like, you know what? Why don't I just bring in somebody who, like, this is what they are A-list at? Somebody who, like, has dedicated their life to the craft of writing songs, rather than me sitting here as, like, producer, guitar player guy who writes songs occasionally and can catch some, you know. Sometimes you go out there in the water and you catch a nice fish. Great. But somebody who's dedicated their life to this type of fishing, I threw this song to Barnes. It's like, hey, I need some help. Does this strike you as something that you're interested in? He's like, oh, yeah, I know exactly what to do with this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so sometimes it's delegating those sort of things where, all right, it's either going to take me the next 6 days to figure this song out, or I find somebody to delegate it to. We can have a creative discourse back and forth and bring in each other's thing, and it'll be mutually beneficial in that regard. And it'll get done in a much less time. Why would I not choose that? Where I can invite one of my friends into the project. They'll help make it better than I would anyways. Mm-hmm. And it saves me 5 days of time.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes doing that sort of stuff, just knowing when to delegate and who to delegate to really helps.
I will say, I mean, you say, like, why would I not do that? I'll tell you why some people can't do that. It's all ego. I have as one of my questions here, like, how you are so collaborative and your thing that you do, you know, if I can just sum it all under an umbrella of, like, this thing is all about collaboration. And it makes it so entertaining to watch and consume. But my question is, how are you so collaborative? And were you ever conscious at any point of, like, you know what, I could do all these things myself. I've got the skills and the talent, but I'm going to put my ego aside, and I want this to be more collaborative. That seems to be something that comes rather naturally to you, but I want to highlight it just, like, for the listener and say, like, that often, especially in our business, is not the way that it goes. you know?
Yeah. I've had varying, it took me a while to get there. And obviously I still have parts of my ego that want to step in and sometimes should, like, especially being a front man of a band, you kind of have to have you have to be able to turn it on, even if it's playing a character sometimes. Like sometimes I'm about to step on stage. I'm like, all right, I kind of got to turn it up right now. I need to play a little bit of a character to play that up. But I think inherently what I do that is most compelling is in the rhythm guitar realm and as a music director and arranger, which kind of falls into producer territory in today's day and age sometimes too, just because I have the chops on the computer. But because what I do is the thing that's most compelling about my artistry is in being a music director, a guitar player, rhythm section person, it lends itself to painting the backdrop and being the frame of the painting. So when you go to the Louvre or wherever and you go look at paintings, you have the main subject, but then there's all of the background, there's the choice of colors, and there's the frame that they decided to put it in. I really think that the strengths that I bring musically and artistically are, and the things that I've honed, are the frame, the background, the landscape, to make whatever the main subject is shine in its best way and fit in a way. So I think because of that, I'm just down. Like I love working with people who want to be that centerpiece and that want to be framed in a way that's also maybe a little bit different than they would do on their own records. I love collaborating because I don't care to be the I'll tell you what I don't want to do is be the person singing the song. There's a couple times where I'm like, I should sing this song. You know, it's like I have the kind of voice where it's, you know, one song on the album. If it's a band, give me one song. Okay. I get Octopus's Garden. You guys take the rest. That's about what the audience wants to hear out of my singing voice. Okay. Yeah. And it's fun. It's cute. It's different. Right. So I don't want to be the singer. I don't have to be the front person shredding. I would love to build everything around it. And then for a lot of the collaborators that I work with, it's a non-threatening environment because they're not competing with me to be that.
Yeah.
And I want to help do something with them that maybe they would not want to put on their own album because their fans might think like, oh, is this a new direction that you're going? Like, is this what we're doing now? I don't know. So in the environment of my record, it's a little less threatening. Mm. And then also what it does for me is it gives me this brand new creative energy. And it helps me to do stuff a lot faster as well. I can do a lot more music when I'm collaborating with other people because there's all this other energy and ideas that are coming in. And I don't know, it seems to be the thing that works well. And yes, sometimes I have to be the front person and it is my name on the record, but I do feel like inherently with what I do, it lends itself to help also just set up and prop up somebody else. And I don't feel threatened by that either.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So a couple things I wanted to ask too here, Corey, as we're coming to our conclusion for the speed round, you really need to get ready emotionally for that.
Great.
You're on stage with Dave Matthews, speaking of collaborations like, you know, ramping up the whole thing. What is it like to, in that moment where you're like, okay, because I think, again, something that is so cool about your story that I think is so inspiring is, like you said, in your 20s, you're hustling, you're grinding. And it really is, you said this so articulately, and I can't express this enough to people who are listening who don't know the music industry as intimately as we do, the three of us. But, like, you know, it's true. Your 20s are usually when you're, like, because music industry is sort of based on novelty, right? So the new thing is always the best thing. And so it's like your 20s is kind of usually when people are hitting it the hardest and you're the hottest. You know, because you're the new thing. They've never heard Corey Wong before. It's like, we want to take as much Corey Wong as we can. But because you were doing studio and Sideman and live and whatever in that season, your 30s became what most people's 20s are. You know, 30s and 40s are now what you're doing. And so what is it like to be sitting up there with Dave and thinking like, this is, you know, in the season of life you're in, how hard you've worked to get where you are, to have someone like him acknowledge what you're doing and want him, you know, to invite you up like that. Like, can you talk about that?
It's incredible.
Thank you. By the way, you said the word hustle. I got to backpedal just for a second because I did say there was a third agenda with Warped Tour that involved hustle that I didn't get to. There was an Ernie Ball stage at Warped Tour, and Ernie Ball would get local groups, local bands, and small bands to play that stage during Warped Tour.
Yeah.
So when I was going back from in the pit to watching, the third level was trying to hustle with the Ernie Ball cats to someday be able to play on the Ernie Ball stage.
I love that so much.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, yeah. what it feels like now is absolutely insane. Okay. Speaking of the Dave thing, by the way, three people know this. I told one of my friends and I told my manager, and they convinced me not to do it. I was going to wear a diaper on stage just in case. Okay. I was going to wear some Depends. I was going to ask for it on the rider.
That's very self-aware. Lack of ego again.
Yeah, lack of ego. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. Sitting in with Dave Matthews Band at Madison Square Garden.
Okay. Come on, man.
If there's any time where you need Depends.
Yeah, it is that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or the, you know, the bass could be going. I mean, your 13-year-old intestines couldn't handle that.
Exactly. Are still
ghibli. I already had one mistake with Black Eyed Peas. With BEP, I wasn't about to do it with DMV.
Well said.
So I'm dead serious. You can ask my friend Eric Foss, who I grew up with. I told him this once when we were 19 years old. I don't remember what it was. Oh, so back in the day, my family, we used to do, my old stepdad, we did some, he owned this motorcycle shop, and they did some stuff with the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And there was like some volunteer and blah, 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 and this and that. And part of the thing when you're volunteering at these things is, you know, think about it for yourself. What would you do if you were part of the Make-A-Wish Foundation and had a wish for yourself? Ask Foss yourself. When I was 19, I said, I want to play on stage with Dave Matthews Band. I'm dead serious. That was at one point. If I, God forbid, anything happened, that was going to be my make-a-wish. And here I am in my 30s, get to play on stage with Dave. And I figured, you know, they'll ask me to play one song. He's like, yeah, stay up for like five songs. Here's these five songs. Gosh. We'd love you to. And it's just.
That's incredible. What,
tell me what the five were.
It was Tripping Billies.
Yep.
Too Much.
Yep.
Ants Marching.
Good gracious.
I mean, these are the hits, man.
There was Anyone Seen the Bridge.
Okay.
And what else am I missing?
There's a great
41,
music.
Was that one?
Well, they did ask me to play 41, but the day before, somebody who came to sit in, that was the only song they knew. So they just played it with him.
Oh, So Much to Say.
So Much to Say.
Oh, yeah, and So Much to Say. Oh my gosh! I mean, the hits, dude.
Can I listen? No kidding, we're just gonna man. This is gonna be a quick little music digression, but it has to be said. And people that know me at all have listened to Day's Five Hot Takes, which we've had Mr. Corey Wong on too, and this podcast. I am very close to going on a campaign, and I love DMB. I'm not like the biggest fan in the world, but I grew up listening to Dave, and he's amazing. I think he may be the most slept on guitar player of all time. I really mean this. Guitar playing and guitar parts are. John and I talked about this for like 45 minutes the other day. Me and John McLaughlin right here on Dadville. But we were getting ready. And I was like, bro, I just have to say this because I'd gotten in this just crazy wormhole of Dave Matthews stuff and videos of him watching. And I was like, this is where John and I landed. His thing is so unique. It literally can't be replicated. Like, you can't be influenced by him because how do you even think about what he's doing? There's no way to play guitar like him.
And it's tough to be influenced by him because I was telling Dave Barnes that I think Dave Matthews Band is like the most listened to band. I mean, I listened to all his stuff growing up. It's the most listened to band that I wouldn't say influenced my own music because I felt like if I start to do what he's doing, then immediately everyone's going to be like, oh, you're doing a cover band, you know, like, I bring in a soprano saxophone. They're like, oh, okay, you're doing the Dave Matthews thing. You know,
but there's you can't, he, I really, here we go. Hottest take Hottest take in Devil.
Let's go. I'm letting you go, and then my feet are coiled. Spinning. I'm ready to go. You finish.
You're pulled back in the cannon, and all they got to do is play the music. I think as much as any musician, and I would say especially singer, songwriter, guitar player, he to me is the most like Kal-El from a planet we've never seen. He solitarily came in on some pod, unearthed himself, played guitar. And that will never happen again. It's just like, I watched a video on how to play Tripping Billies, and I was like, that no rational human writes a guitar part like that. There's nothing about it that makes sense. The melodies he chooses, that his whole thing is just so uniquely him and so unbelievably wonderful. And then John and I, and here's my conclusion. This is just our hot take. I think one of the reasons he doesn't get his flowers is because he's seen as such a jam guy. You know, it's like the culture that surrounds that band.
Sure.
And, you know, so it's hard, I think, for a lot of people to see him as this force of acoustic guitar playing, because it's like, it's Dave Matthews. And he's great. He's cool. But, like, you know, it's Dave Matthews. Like, all the SAEs are just pounding some Dave Matthews. You know, like, the Sig Ups are just cranking some Dave Matthews. And so I think he doesn't get his just rewards, because I just think it's so hard for people to understand, like, oh, he's really good at guitar. It's like, bro, he's not good at guitar. He sort of invented a guitar style that only he can do. And that's the end of my rant.
That's what I'm saying. Not only that, there's also chord voicings that are associated with Dave. I can't think of many people at all where you're like, oh, give me the DMB voicings. People know exactly what you're talking about. You're in the key of D. You got the open D string ringing, and you're playing tenths.
Yeah, yeah.
You're playing tenths on the sixth and third string, and you got an open D ringing out, and you're just playing whatever voicings you want. Tripping Billies, Too Much, all these songs, Gray Street, all these songs are like that. And it's straight up Dave voicings.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like maybe you hear like the way Hornsby voices certain things, certain clusters in the middle of his voicings, and you're like, oh, that sounds kind of like a Hornsby.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain instruments where there's certain stuff that you just kind of recognize what it is.
Somebody's thing.
Or it's got a thing to it. Dave has that on acoustic guitar, which I can't think of many people at all in this day and age, especially where it's give me the XYZ thing when it's talking about voicings. You know, and Dave, yes, absolutely. He can carry a band playing guitar, and he can just carry it doing it solo as well. He's insane.
I just feel
so
like
good.
He would be it'd be so funny to, and it's why they were the Dave Matthews Band, and here's the end of this rant, but I think it would be a great skit to have someone like for the first time when he's trying to put a band together and he starts playing those songs for like potential band, and they're like, and they've just got like a pad and they're staring at like, start at the top of that one again. So do you know what the root note is of that? And he's like, I don't know. I'm just playing. And they're like, okay. Okay. And so it goes to a different time signature halfway through the chorus. Yeah. He's like, oh man. Do you do any Skinner or is it just, it's just your stuff? No, that's great. Okay. So here's the last question I have for you. Dealing in sort of that, we're talking about guitar heroes, whatever. I'm curious with Wong Notes, what is there some commonality that you have found in these guitar legends? Like, is there, and it can be musical, it can be psyche, it can be the way they think about life, music, you know, life, love, the pursuit of happiness, whatever it is. But is there something that you can tell when you sit with these mostly virtuosic people that play guitar like they do, that you go, man, isn't it funny how this always comes up, or they always have this way of thinking about life that tends to be pretty similar?
The ones that you can tell have a deep connection to the music, because some of the people that I've interviewed, it's like, oh, they kind of fell into this, it seems like. Wow. Or like, oh, I don't know that they really, some of them it's like, how did you, wait, oh, this actually, now in this interview, I'm kind of curious actually more after the interview. But that's maybe 2% of the people I've interviewed. The majority of them, the main through line, and I would stand by this 100%, is that they've found something creatively unique that is their own.
Wow.
That when they play or when they do their own thing, there's something about it that's their own fingerprint. It's not about, oh, yeah, I caught on to this trend, or, oh, I just like was the hardest shredding guy out there.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, I could just play faster than everybody, so now everybody knows me. You know, I mean, it's not the Olympics, you know, this is art. So Of course, sometimes that plays into it. But it's that all these people have something that's uniquely them. Hmm. You know, if you take a look at Steve Vai, yes, he shreds. But when you hear him play against the other shredders, he sounds like his own thing.
Yeah.
And he's got his own way of vibrato and bending and his own melodic sense. Satriani, same thing. He's got his own thing. You know, and the songwriters that I've interviewed, even if it's they're writing for other people, there's still something about what they do that's very uniquely them that stands out as, yes, they're a master of their craft. Yes, they have mastered excellence in what they do, but they do it in a way where the ones that are really good, it can only be them that does that. Like if you hear them, it's like, oh, that's this person.
Yeah.
It couldn't be anybody else.
Yeah, that's great.
Madison Cunningham is like that. Listen to Madison, it's like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You know, and or Jacob Collier, Vince Gill, John Mayer, Theo from Wolfpack, my friend. A lot of these people that have been on the podcast, it's like they found Joe Dart. You find a way to do it in your way.
Yeah.
Joe Walsh. It's like, oh, yeah, nobody else sounds like Walsh. Like Walsh is just Walsh, you know? So a lot of these people, it's just they found something that's uniquely them and they've really just honed that in to its fullest and are really, and it's the same thing that I'm doing. It's like you find the thing and you find the purest form of that diamond or gold, whatever you want to call it, and then learn how to use it in as many settings as you can.
Yeah. Okay. So we end with a speed round that Dave prepped you to get emotionally ready for it. But if I can, real quick, I have one more question because I'm curious.
Yeah, come at me. I'm chilling.
As a performer, you know, for me, you know, getting up on stage and playing my shows over the last two decades, there's always been a thing that I need to happen to feel like it's going well.
Mm-hmm.
Like for me to walk off stage afterward and feel like, oh yeah, that was a good show. You know, there are one or two or whatever things, and they've changed over time. You know, in the beginning, it was like all about the piano. It was all like my voice is just happens to be there because this song has words. But all I want people to pay attention to is what I'm doing on the piano.
Yeah.
And that's changed. Now it's more about like just the general flow of the show and our people. Am I connecting with the audience? So I'm always curious when we have guests on who are performers, like what is it for you when you get up on stage? And because you have a band with you all the time, like it might not even, sometimes for me, it doesn't even have anything to do with the audience some nights. It's like, I want to connect with my bandmates. And if we're having a party up here, then it's great, you know. What would you say it is for you? Like when you get up on stage, what do you need to happen to feel like that was a good show?
It changes, but I have a small checklist right now that I go through. Number one is the band clocking. Is our time feel and our groove clocking in a way that feels right to me? Because I'm all about time and rhythm. So if the band feels like it's clocking and the groove feels right, that's number one. Number two, is everybody fully engaged in what's happening? Are we paying attention? And this is myself included. Are we all fully present in the music that's happening and all the stuff that's arranged, everything that we've worked on, are we executing that? And then the third piece is, when we have these jumping points, because so much of my show is very arranged to all of a sudden these jumping points where it's full freedom that jump back into. So it's jumping points and landing points. So the place that we jump from is very arranged. The place that we land to is very arranged. But a lot of the stuff in between is very open. So those open places, are we taking risks that feel like they're true to our artistic selves? And do they feel like they're actual exploring something for the sake of the music rather than check out this lick?
Yeah.
I'm not stoked about that. I want to explore for the sake of the music. So when we get into the exploration and improvisation side, are we really chasing something in the moment that we know is going to work well, but still explores a new space creatively that the music calls for? Those three things, the clock in time thing, the presence, and then the exploration for music's sake, are kind of the three. I know that if we have those three, that the audience is going to be in.
Yeah,
that's good. Yeah, that's really good.
I love that.
All right, here we are. Speed round. So, Corey, remember, these are speed round. And don't think you can't take your time, but, you know, let's see what happens when you go with your gut. And we begin.
Come at me.
If you could record a track with any artist, who would it be?
Brad Meldow.
Wow.
Locked and Loaded.
I did not see that coming, but I love that.
I've been trying to... we actually had something on the books years ago in 2019, when it fell apart.
His Beatles thing I've been wearing out.
Oh my gosh. Nobody covers the Beatles like Meldow.
It's so good.
All right, if you could play guitar like anybody, like in this scenario, you would onboard, in addition to all your stuff.
Yeah, you're not losing yours.
Onboard someone else's skills. Who would that be?
I'd have to go with Steve Lukather.
Oh.
He's such an all-around, he can play everything. He's everything he plays sounds like the record.
Man.
And he's got insane chops. He's got a depth of knowledge just from decades of doing it that I think, you know, me growing up listening to Green Day and Weezer and playing funk music, I would still sound like me, but I would have all of this weird LA history of the 70s and 80s
that
I would onboard that maybe would totally freak me out. I'm sure would freak me out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But Lukather.
Yeah, the sidebar. Have you seen, I guarantee you know these guys, but they're doing the coolest videos. They just did one with Dan Huff where they go in and have him play on top of tracks he played on. And play his parts. Have you seen that? It's an Instagram account.
Yeah, Mason Marangella and Vertex Effects.
Oh,
they do that.
My gosh, yeah. It's cool.
So dope.
You know what's cool about it? It made me, when you said Lukather, it made me think of this. It's kind of like, you know, if you're a guitar player, you know who these guys are. But it's great for understanding, like, oh yeah, when I don't think about that part in the track because it's some pop hit. But good gracious, when he starts playing it and I see him play it, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's like this integral part of this song that's so simple or some, you know, like, God, I love that account so much. All right, next question. Some of these are tricky, so get ready. If you could have dinner with any three people, alive or dead, who would it be?
I feel like you need to remove some figures of history.
Okay.
I mean, are you going to... Jesus Christ.
I mean, you can do that. This is your podcast, Corey.
I mean, absolutely. Cat's got to be at dinner.
Jesus is there.
Jesus Christ, Jaco Pastorius. Just let those two go at it for about
an hour.
There's
a long hair contingency so far. That's what I'm wearing.
And who would just be a... I mean, as if either of those two aren't a wild card enough.
I mean, for real.
I feel like I need, like, I have two figures like that, and then I have, like, the third person is like a close friend of mine, so we can just be like, dude, what the hell?
like you're nudging each other the whole time.
Yeah. But that, so that would be just general, one of my close friends next to me would be the third, just to like kind of absorb this stuff with, so I didn't feel. Plus, it would maybe be a little bit of a power play
because
the two of us know each other and nobody else. Like, we would have kind of an upper hand because we already have rapport, and the other two would be like,
I don't know that you're ever going to have an upper hand on Jesus, but I know what you
mean. Well, I know. I'm just saying it's socially.
Just socially. Yeah. Sure. All right. If you could take your family on vacation anywhere, where would you go and how long would the vacation be?
Italy. But how long? I feel like 2 weeks in Italy is... 3 weeks in Italy is good.
Yeah.
3 weeks.
10 days in Rome. 10 days kind of milling about. And then 5 days in Florence in a villa.
Oh, gosh. I'm in on that. Okay, finally, here we go. If you could write a book on fatherhood, what would it be called?
Passing On Passion.
Ooh. Okay.
So maybe something along those lines.
I see you've already started writing it. That's way too fast.
Or, well, actually, though, people can interpret like passing on passion.
Yeah.
So I don't want to confuse.
But that's genius, though, because people are like, well, what is it? I got to read it to figure out. What's his take on this?
Sometimes you got to pass on your passion. Sometimes you got to pass on your passion.
There it is.
Look at that. We were here for the birth of another podcast.
Yeah, I think we got it.
Corey, thank you so much for your time, dude. It is so good to see you.
Great to see you, too.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
We got to get an in-person hang.
Let's do it. IPH, baby. You and us and Jesus and Jacko.
Dude, could you imagine how dope that would be?
Jesus and Jacko sounds like a really interesting movie or book. You know what I mean? Like some, but it's actually written by Malcolm Gladwell, so it has some really, you know, cerebral thing. You're like,
I'm gonna write an AI script to make that a real thing in the style of Malcolm Gladwell. Write a story about Jesus Christ and Jaco Pastorius.
Yeah, yeah.
Living on a tour bus.
Yeah.
In 1998.
Yeah.
Warp tour. Across the United States. Here are the other headlining bands. Jesus is there as a chaplain to Jaco because Jaco got into some trouble. Jocko's kind of going from, he's like doing his punk jazz thing. People aren't really receiving it well. And
he's on the Ernie Ball stage from 3 to 4.
Yeah. 3 to 4. This guy needs to cover like 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. He's doing a 6-hour set.
Yeah, he's going.
And he's losing steam, but his chops are heavier than ever. They're harder than ever. He's shredding harder than everybody. But people keep walking by
because
they don't see him this bass guy. He is not on the main stage yet.
Yeah.
Yep.
This actually sort of applies to Jesus down here too, which is really amazing. Well done.
That's true.
God bless, brother. Love you.
Love you too.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with the King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.